Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
All right, we're about to go around the NFL here in Loop on Sports Radio 610. Before we get there, question of the day, in honor of the summer solstice, which is today, most sunlight that you're going to get on a day all year long. We were asking, what are the indicators that it's going to be a long day? Somebody said the longest day is when they drop the kids off and then realize they got to run home and grab forgotten things for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to make that double trip. Oh, yeah, that run back home. I've done that multiple times. For something as small as a laptop charger, you guys have seen that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's always rough for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate this from the 346. You know it's going to be long as a delivery driver when In the Loop keeps reminding you how long this day is. But I feel like today...
Today's a good long.
It's the sunlight, though.
Yeah.
That's good. Because I feel like, especially as a delivery driver, I always feel sick for them when I see it and it's dark outside and it's an Amazon driver out here still finishing out their route. I'm like, damn, that's got to be tough.
But when you're a kid and it's summertime and it's summer solstice and the days are long, dude, I'd walk back into the house at 9:30 because it was light until 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was great, great childhood memories of those long summer days.
There you go. All right, let's go around the NFL here in the Loop on Sports Radio 610. C.J. Mosley, five-time Pro Bowl linebacker, retiring after 11 years between the Ravens and the Jets. He announced that this week. He said, quote, "Today is time to wake up from my childhood dream and share it with the next generation. I spent my whole life and career building my legacy. Now it's time to start a new chapter with new dreams." So C.J. Mosley stepping away, 40 quarterbacks hit, over 1,000 tackles,
mm-hmm.
12 sacks, 12 interceptions. Like, I mean, C.J. Mosley was really good.
I remember standing on the sideline of a college football game. It was Alabama against somebody, and there were a couple of general managers, you know, kind of within my eyesight.
Oh, look at this.
Standing on the side.
Just rubbing elbows with some general managers, as one does.
I was standing there, and there were a couple of GMs there. I think Rick Smith might have been one of them, actually, because I chatted it up with Rick Smith back in the day. And the conversation they were having about C.J. Mosley was so funny. They were like, don't need to see any more. Don't need to see any more from this guy. And the other thing is, it's kind of retirement season now, right? This is from now until the start of training camp, when a lot of players might say, you know, kind of like, yeah, either they're not getting signed or they're just, it's kind of hitting them. You know, a lot of times, a lot of players, and Seth has talked about this, you might want to play another year, but you just kind of realize, you know what? Nah.
Yeah, especially because, yeah. Like, you went through the offseason or what have you, and maybe you're like, okay, I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
I could probably still play. Like, you're filling out your body. But as you start heading towards what I imagine for football players is the most dreaded part of the mm-hmm. season, which is training camp, you start doing that evaluation of, do I want to and can I do another one of those?
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's got to be a calculus of, am I willing to do the hard stuff in order to get to the fun mm-hmm. stuff?
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't know if that's exactly what the methodology or the thought process was for C.J. Mosley. However, it does seem like it this time of year, it feels like at least mm-hmm. one out of every four that have is just like, I looked up and I was like, I don't think I want to do that.
It's retirement season. We'll see a few more of these as we go on. But what a player.
For sure. But, I mean, nobody's Hall of Famer, clearly, right?
No, but just terrific player.
No, for sure. For sure. One of those guys that's, you know, Hall of pretty damn good.
Yeah.
I think is where you have a C.J. Mosley. Salute to a good career there. Now, definitely a Hall of Famer in various rights, both at the college level and the NFL level. Former NFL running back Adrian Peterson was in a fist fight over a poker game, and this happened end of last month, interestingly enough, I was intrigued that it took this long for it to get to us, the general public. But yeah, man, apparently Adrian Peterson, since he, you know, stopped playing, he's gotten into poker, which, can I stop down and say, this is what you're supposed to do when you have some money and you want to do some level of competitive. Not to say that this is the only one, but I have constantly been like flabbergasted by the likes of like Le'Veon Bell and such, that they get done playing football, making their money, trading on their body, and then they go, you know what I want to do for fun on the after side of this? Box.
Yeah.
UFC. I'm like, no, you did it. Mm-hmm. You did the things where you had to have hit your head over and over. Like, now you could chill out. Yeah. So I do appreciate that portion of it. However, for the 40-year-old, you know, has been doing a little bit of poker and such since 21. And this happened in Houston, here in Houston, at a spot where TMZ posted a video yesterday of Adrian Peterson getting into this fist fight back on the 27th of May. And you seem to have a great joy in kind of recapping this video now, don't you?
Well, at first I was going to say, I got to give that other dude credit. You know, he was at least, I would be sprinting the other way, you know, if that were me. But he was at least trying to, trying to hold his own there with Adrian Peterson. But then Seth kind of opened my eyes. I think Seth was right. Basically, he knew a lot of people were in the room watching, so he didn't want to like totally, you know, cop out. So he was backing up and trying to hold his own. So just not trying to embarrass himself in that situation.
Oh, yeah, man. You got to. It's a delicate balance of showing that you're not scared, but also we don't really want to do this, right?
But like, see, it's a cooler way to say, I'm not about to do this without looking scared.
Yeah.
Because as a grown man, it's easy to say, man, I ain't got time for this, man. Look, you got it, dog. You got it, dog. Man, I'm too old to be fighting out here, man. Yeah. No, I ain't doing all. I mean, it's a cooler way to do it, though.
Yeah.
Without having to potentially get your ass whooped by somebody like that.
That is right. That is
he
right.
He did. The other dude did land a couple, man. He landed a couple on him, but he was
Peterson
backing up.
Peterson was trying to take him out, though.
Well,
you say he was backing up, and I'll circle back around to this. Mm-hmm. Like, there might have been a little fear in there, which I would have as well, because I know who Adrian Peterson is.
He just didn't want to embarrass himself, but he did land a couple.
Well, I mean, but the landing a couple were, he was counterpunching, right?
Yeah.
So I guess if you were doing this thing, standing in is not necessarily the way to handle this. He's trying to get that. See if I can dip and then hit you with that, rock you on that comeback.
It seemed like Adrian Peterson don't really have the hands.
No. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was missing a lot. You could tell he's really clumsy.
Yeah.
And the dude was benefited by, you know, weaving and all that.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, again, pursuant to what I was talking earlier, remember Adrian Peterson got knocked out by, was it Le'Veon? Was it Le'Veon Bell? Yeah, it was Le'Veon Bell when they had that exhibition boxing.
Oh, yeah,
and I'm like, yeah, man. This is why you shouldn't do that.
Yeah, you could tell if Peterson knew how to box, he would have probably cleaned
him.
Killed
him. Yes. And Peterson has.
He was very clumsy and falling all over himself. So.
Yeah. Peterson did say he's, quote, cool with the guy, and it was like a brother situation. So I guess they play poker a lot, kind of knew each other. Things got out of hand. Somebody did something, and all of a sudden turned into that.
So this is the thing. My brothers are significantly younger than me, so I didn't get in this space. How, like, for those of y'all that have brothers, I want to trade on your experience. And obviously, Lopez, you definitely have some level of understanding here. When you have brother type things, those happen at the house or they happen in public?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah,
that to me felt like we do it at the house, but when we out, you know what I mean? We can't be embarrassing everybody like this.
Well,
yeah. I knew a bunch of brothers that got into it publicly and behind the scenes where you, as a friend, you try to step in like, nah, we ain't about to do this, man.
Yeah.
But sometimes they want to do it, and sometimes you just got to let them do it, and then, you know, they'd be cool afterward.
I had two brothers, and I had two cousins that for about 4 or 5 years grew up in our house. So there were three actually, but two for most of the time. So there were five dudes in the house. I mean, it's going to happen.
That's a lot of testosterone.
It's going to happen. But the one thing about fighting with your brother, it's usually like taken to the ground. And
wrestling in that instance.
Throwing hands with my brothers or one of my cousins that are like brothers, I think only happened twice where you're actually like punching. You know,
is that the alcohol portion of this?
No, I was in high school and got into it with my older brother, and we were throwing hands. But usually it's take them to the ground, you know?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so getting out here and throwing the hands is definitely not in your particular purview. It seems like it is for Adrian Peterson. Everything seems like it was ultimately all good on that front. A little bit of official news in that way from the Houston Texans. Damon Arnett officially signed now that they had the intention of doing that for the 6'5", 195 cornerback, former first-round pick in 2020 out of Ohio State. The corresponding move for that, Lopez?
Mm-hmm.
Your fave, Tucker Addington.
Tucker Addington. Man, we hardly knew him.
Ah, man, we didn't even get a chance to, like, develop a relationship.
Damn shame what they did to that dog.
old Tucker Addington.
Not old. Why'd you make him old Tucker Addington?
That was
at this
O-L
point?
Apostrophe.
Ah, okay.
That was fair O-L enough. Apostrophe. And by the way, I'm sure you guys heard this. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. John McClain called the Arnett signing the worst free agent signing in the history of the Texans.
There's no way.
Ed Reed would like a word. yes.
Like, it's just impossible for a signing of this stakes, mm-hmm. this low of stakes,
mm-hmm.
to be the worst. Like, you're not even expecting him to start.
No.
If things go well, you don't really expect him to play.
But mm-hmm. see, he's looking at morals.
Track record.
Yeah, he's looking at morals. He's not looking at on the field type mm-hmm. thing. He's looking at morals and how the Houston Texans used to go about things where they stay away from people like that and character and all that stuff.
But the thing about that is if it doesn't work out, cut him. You can cut him a week in.
Yeah.
You're not losing anything.
And then who's to say he's not a changed man?
Well, John Gruden said he is.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, if he's a changed man, then what's the purpose of being upset about his past?
Well, what McClain was saying is it's more than one second opportunity. It's more than two opportunities. It's like four. But I'm sure you saw the stuff that John Gruden said.
Yes, I did.
And Gruden went to bat for him.
He did.
Yeah, he did. Big time.
I'm sorry. I'm just in my head thinking about how a Gruden cosign has changed over the last like half century or half decade.
But he sounded like, hey.
No, for sure.
Yeah, hey, this is different. Yeah.
No, absolutely. And I mean, it does seem like that. And I mean, look, if there is a place to have that ability to facilitate mm-hmm. some of that, it does feel like this Texans team does have that to some degree. And as you mentioned, right, like this could be Deontay Johnson if it's a problem, right, where it just
done.
We tried and he's yeah. gone and that's yeah. fine. Do you have any problem with like just the notion of the way that the Texans are or what this might say about the way that the Texans are operating? Because it does seem like some people, as evidenced by John McClain, did like the kind of the mentality that the Texans operated seemingly with where, no, we are going to have moral upstanding gentlemen on top of dudes that we believe can play football.
I might have a bigger problem if he was a really good player that you expected to be a starter. Like they brought him in to be a rotation player or a starter. I think they're kicking the tires, man.
Yeah.
And they're going to see what he's like. And if it doesn't work out, we'll see you later.
Yeah, that's how I kind of look at yeah. it, too. It's not like bringing in Antonio Brown, who's
yeah. Ooh, boy.
Who is just a show of himself.
And unrepentant in this moment.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's
yeah.
the thing. Is like he does come with a level of mm-hmm. repentance in this. Like he has talked very much about his journey and what have mm-hmm. you. So I do understand that. Like that's always been it for me. Josh Hader is one of those guys that mm-hmm. that I always think about. I remember when, you know, people went in the Wayback Machine on some of his tweets and found some things that were unsavory.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, he came through and he had the apologies. And one of the things that I always think about when those moments happen is, okay, this isn't reflective of who you are. Maybe you're a different person now. Can you show that to me? Like
yeah,
what
yeah.
what in your life helped you get to that point mm-hmm. to like give me, not necessarily that I need to be proved to necessarily, mm-hmm. but like, hey man, yeah, tell me how you got to this place. Damon Arnett has done a decent amount of that, obviously.
Playing the UFL.
Not just the yeah. actual playing in the UFL, but talking about the ways that he has been humbled mm-hmm. and he's tried to become a more mature, more professional mm-hmm. player. And obviously, as you mentioned, tried to display it on a level that he had access to. This one I feel a lot better about than another type of circumstance mm-hmm. where you do not have that level of repentance, a la someone like Antonio Brown, which is
so you have no issue, I mean, or no worries about his possible issues off the field.
Well,
issues.
I think somewhere in the back of the mind, maybe. But again, I don't think this is no harm, no foul. That's how I kind of look at it.
Like yeah. When they signed, I wasn't thinking about his off the field issues.
Yeah.
I mean, we brought it up because that's part of his history, but I didn't think like, oh man, maybe he can go off again or mm-hmm. get into some trouble again. I never even thought about that.
Yeah.
I mean, and if he's unprofessional, like that's grounds for getting him out of here in and of itself.
100%.
So we'll see that. Somebody said, we need a couple characters on the team. We have enough prayer warriors.
That's not the case anymore.
I mean,
there are a lot of prayer warriors. And
it was like that maybe five, six years ago, or maybe four years ago. But
yeah. Hey, have him go to prayer Bible study with him too.
Yeah,
man. Let's do that.
He probably go to church now. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he probably faithful now. I don't know.
I have no idea. I love how you were leaking confidence all through that. Yeah, he'd probably go to church, maybe. I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe not. You know,
we'll see. All right. There you go. That's around the NFL here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Y'all popping on the text line. Y'all are funny. Mm-hmm. Somebody mentioned Amon Green. What is Amon Green from?
Oh. Worst signing.
Yeah.
Oh, worst signing.
Oh, wow.
No, he's on the list.
Do we want to play that game all mm-hmm. the way out? Because there's definitely some. Yeah. There are definitely.
Brock.
That one. Yep. That one still.
I still say Ed Reed.
To this day.
They were so sold that he was going to be a stud here, man. They were sold. They were sold.
I was too, but I have to try to be honest. I might have been drinking a decent amount of Kool-Aid in that circumstance. Somebody said when you have a strong organization and culture, you're not worried about off the field. To some degree.
That's true. But you got people like McClain that's like, I don't want that type of stuff on this team.
Yeah.
No matter what he's doing now, he could be a pastor right now.
Mm-hmm.
They still always go back to the past or what happened.
Yeah.
All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, kind of a question I've been bandying about since Altuve reached the 2,300 hits mark. Or was that earlier this week or last week? Do you think this week?
Yeah.
Man, this week has been long. Do you think Jose Altuve could get to 3,000? 713-572-4610. Let's discuss that in numbers in baseball. Let's talk about it next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
It's a funky Friday here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Do you think Altuve hits 3,000? 713-572-4610. Astros have been on a pretty good run of things, a decent mm-hmm. run of things. Altuve, you talked a little bit about earlier some of the places in which, though, you know, we've had some cool mm-hmm. Spots. You know, you mentioned that Pena just about 200 for the last week.
Yeah.
A little bit somewhat near for Altuve as well, like mm-hmm. 217, I think was what you had said, batting.
Yeah, Altuve's batting 217 over the last week, Pena 200, Christian Walker 208, and that's enough of that. Let's get back to hitting the ball.
Yes, absolutely, for numerous reasons, yes. Right? Just yes. for our personal enjoyment, but also for Jose Altuve, he crossed the threshold, 2,300 hits earlier mm-hmm. this week, and that puts him very close. I mean, currently he is third by a mere 5 hits on the Astros all-time career hits leaderboard. Second on the list is Bagwell, and then at the top of it, of course, we know Craig Biggio, the only 3,000 hit man when it comes to the Astros history. And when he hit that milestone of 2,300 at his age, Jose Altuve, 14 years into the league, he still has 4 years left outside of this 2025 season. On his contract, talk less of whatever else you get out of him. At how old is Jose at this point? 35?
35.
I started thinking to myself, do you think he can hit 3,000? Can he hit that milestone? Because, I mean, within the next week, it's probably fair to assume that he is second all-time in mm-hmm. hits for the Astros. So, like, that milestone itself will hit. The next thing that he can do, at least when it comes to hits, is try and break that 3,000 mark.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny, you brought this up because it's probably been a couple of months ago, but he had hit some milestone. I'm like, how real is this thing? You know, how real is it? So I kind of dug in and looked at a couple of things and I think it's a really good question. He's going to try, you know, why would he not? He's got the contract. He'll be here. He's a lifetime Astro. They're not going to displace him. They're going to try to make sure that he's put in positions where he can swing the bat and maybe protect him defensively a little bit, as we've already seen. And so he's gonna get his shot. The question is he going to get there?
Yeah, and that's one of the things is I thought, oh, okay, so the move to left field might also help that. You would think it's kind of weird because it's like, hey, more movement, I guess, in the outfield. But as we've talked about, like the protection of having less opportunities to have to make a play on the ball in general is there in left field. I do wonder if that's going to give him like and extend the opportunity for him to do this. From the 713, they said he's on pace to hit 3,000 in 2029. Is that over his career? Because he had a nice 4-year stretch where he had 200 plus hits.
Mm-hmm.
That was relatively early in the career between 2014 and 2017. But over the last few years, barring like injury,
I've got the numbers.
It's been a lot closer to 150 to 160 hits a year.
Over the last previous four seasons, not counting this one, he's averaged 156 hits a year.
Right.
156 is right on the brink.
I think I did the math earlier in the week, and he's on pace, assuming that the pace continues for this particular season, to be 154. So right in that same pace. If he keeps that going, that puts him at 3,000 the next, what, four and a half years,
he'll get to 3,000. If at that pace, at 156 hits, he'll be 40 years old. And you start thinking, and this is where it gets interesting to me.
Yes.
And this is why I was kind of looking at it the other day, a couple of months ago. You know, you can say, well, Craig Biggio was 41 when he got to 3,000 hits. There is a couple of differences. Number one, in the previous four seasons, Craig Biggio was averaging about 168 hits. That's 12 hits a year.
Late in his career, huh?
Late in his career. Now, it went down in terms of games because he played fewer games in 06 and 07. But in the previous 4 years, he was over 160, 165. In fact, I got him right here at 180, 146, 166, 178. So he was okay, and then 156 in 05, which is what the average is that he's looking for, and then his games went down in terms of games played. But here's the other thing that I think is very interesting with the difference between Jose Altuve and Craig Biggio. The game is so much different now in terms of what they're doing at the plate. You know, how the game is played, you know, launch angles and all that stuff. Now, Altuve can be something of an anomaly there, too, because he'll drive the ball and singles and doubles and such. But it's going to be like, I couldn't predict it, yes or no, but it's going to be very difficult.
Well, yeah. I think the tough thing about it is if we're in a place where we're kind of projecting that he keeps pace on, you know, what he's been doing of late. And I guess this is a way we circle around to a conversation we had earlier. When does the slowdown hit and what does it look like, right? Because there's a few ways that it can look like, which is just less and less hits, even as he's still, you know, a pretty good hitter, but just maybe not 150 and maybe becomes 140, 130, 120. And it also probably maybe less even of that. He has been remarkably healthy through his career. There are only, I'm looking at two seasons outside of his rookie year, where he played fewer than 100 games of this 15, rather than 14-year career to this point, because this is year 15 that he has. And obviously, I mean, knock on wood, because the way that the Astros worked, you know, God forbid something pops up. I already feel bad even mentioning it. Right? Like, it feels like he will. He's currently at 72 games played, and it feels like he will get to a place where he gets to 100. Like, but...
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Not just 100, 140, 150 every year. How long is that going to keep up? Because you need that to keep up. You need him to keep hitting. And I do wonder, do you see a change in Altuve's, like his particularly his swing, right? Does he become more of a singles hitter? Does he become a little bit more Ichiro than like the big bat that in a small body that he has been, mm-hmm. which is fine for the purposes of 3,000, but how viable does that become for the Astros playing him? Like yeah. he's a legend, and I think he's going to get the deference to mm-hmm. continue playing regardless. But does that change him from being the hitter that he is, where he's hitting either leadoff or three hole, or does that push him into a different place later in his career? Or questions, because that takes away at bats as well.
Yeah, injuries definitely, as you mentioned, is going to be a factor. You also, you know, like every player, and it doesn't have a lot to do with his stature, but I think it might have something to do with his stature in terms of bat speed as you get a little older. You know, he swings a big bat.
Yes, he does.
Literally.
I'm still fascinated. Yeah. He looked like Bam Bam going up yeah. to the plate all the time.
He swings a big bat, literally. And so is that, there's just questions. There's just questions with him. You know, hopefully it'll happen, but the game has changed. You know, he's been durable. You know, who knows if his stature is going to play a factor as he maybe starts to slow down. Who knows, as you mentioned, you know, how the Astros sort of try to keep him going on this pace. And is will there ever be another, at least in the near future, a 3,000 hit player?
It, yeah.
You're looking at Freddie Freeman right now. He's one that has been mentioned. I think
I don't even know where Freddie Freeman is. Freddie Freeman is a monster of a, yeah. like I feel like I don't think enough about Freddie Freeman and how good of a baseball. Like Freddie Freeman was probably a Hall of Famer before he got to the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Somebody has mentioned. I saw this the other day when I was piddling around. Manny Machado is in the hunt. There aren't a lot of players that you could say, oh, he's on pace to be a 3,000 hit guy. Altuve really was one of very, very few.
Yeah, Freddie Freeman's 35 with 2346. Yeah. He's in the same similar boat.
Yeah.
That might be also an interesting race for the two of them.
I think he's one that's been mentioned as well, but a tougher place for him, you know.
And do you feel like we're going to continue to have players in this space? Because, I mean, it's kind of interesting that we have a few of these guys. Machado is sub 2,000 right now, but Machado is also 32.
Yeah.
So he has a couple more seasons to get himself to that place. Of getting a little bit closer.
Mm-hmm.
It does feel like the notion of hitting 3,000 is, along with a lot of other things in baseball, becoming a little bit less, not impressive, but a less, I guess the public is maybe a little bit less enthused than it previously were. Does it feel like baseball has lost some of this attachment to the numbers?
I'm gonna disagree on that. I think 3,000 is still one of those where you go, whoa. I just think it's more difficult to attain. Most stats, I agree with you. Most stats and career achievements, I think the public has kind of lost its luster in terms of the public.
But
3,000 is still, that's monstrous.
How many casual fans can give you, and maybe this is not the fair way because mm-hmm. I'm trying to think back to what point in the history of the United States did you have just like a casual sports fan that can mm-hmm. give you the, you know, what is the all-time leader in home runs in their at. But like, A decent fan could usually rattle off a few of those major numbers that mm-hmm. matter in baseball, whether it's, you know, season home runs in a season mm-hmm. or home runs in a career or hits leaders or what have you. Do you think it's the same? Do you think it's significantly less? Do you think it's where do you think that is now? Because it feels like that's very different
mm-hmm.
From where it was. It feels like baseball is losing some of that, especially as we're losing the possibility of getting 300. I think 300 wins. Pitchers are out of it. JV seems like the last guy, and
he's got a long way to go.
He's got a long way to go, and it feels like that's. Yeah. I mean, the Giants aren't helping him out this year, and I don't know where he finds the wins in the mm-hmm. next two, three seasons to try and get him there.
I think most of those numbers, you're right. They've sort of lost their luster. I still think if you say 3,000 hits, people go whoa. Okay. If you say 300 wins, it's the same. It's just hard to get. It's just really, really. I mean, you would think that Jose Altuve would be just flat out knocking on the door already, as many big seasons as he's had, as many seasons as he's played. How many seasons is it? 16 that he's played now?
Who, Altuve?
Yeah.
This is his 15th season.
15th, yeah. And you would think he'd be right knocking on the door. It's just hard.
It is hard.
It's just very, very difficult.
And so maybe I'm wrong with this one in particular, where the 713 says they big disagree. 3,000 is especially huge now. And that's probably,
fair. I think 3,000 and 300 are still there. Everything else is lost its luster.
And I don't think anybody's touching 300. 3,000, I'm very intrigued to see if Jose Altuve can get Someone's coming in here with their prediction of Altuve hitting 2850 as opposed to getting up to. Yeah, I think that that's probably the more reasonable guess, which, I mean, yeah, 3,000 or the field. The field does feel like the good money there.
Absolutely.
Because of what we talked about. Like, does the bat change at all? Is he, you know, does he stay healthy through all of this? There's something in me, though, that thinks that what they've done to this point and the way that Jose Altuve is going and just knowing who he is and the exuberance that he seems to still have for the game is part of it, too. I think he's getting there by hook or by crook. I think he's getting there.
I can't predict. I think it's so hard because these last 4 years, four and a half years on the pace that he's been, those are some that are just absolutely they eat away at players. You know, and Biggio's the perfect example. He was hitting 160, 170, 160, 170, 140.
Yeah.
You know, so it's tough.
Yeah, and good point by Kix Rocks. More small ball back in the day. Average pitcher wasn't throwing a 94
right.
mile per hour fastball.
I think the game affects it.
I mean, we did have a nice stretch where you had the shift, although obviously Altuve was able to hit through that to some degree. I'm excited to see if he gets there. And kind of disappointed because it feels like JV's not going to get to 300 wins. Obviously, he's had a little bit of a rough go of it this season, and I don't know how many more years he has in him. But, yeah, man, always intrigued by kind of the ways that baseball has molted and shifted. But we continue to watch Jose Altuve. In the next week or so, he could become the second leading hits getter for your Astros. Jeff Bagwell currently 2,314. Jose Altuve, 2,309. Five more and he's tied. Six more to become the second, the dude with the second most hits in Astros history. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get into what's popping, where there was some spiciness in baseball. There was a walk-off that happened, not for the Astros' benefit. And also, why is this team in the CONCACAF Gold Cup? We'll talk about all of it next. All right, let's get into what's popping here on this Friday, almost called it a Wednesday for some weird reason, in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610 is people still talking about the idea of Altuve, maybe will he get to 3,000? Somebody said 3,000 with one team as well. Crazy. Something that we're looking to hopefully see with Jose Altuve. I mean, if he does get to 3,000 with the Astros, he's going to retire here. I don't think that there's a way they let him go.
Well, like Biggio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If Altuve reaches the 3,000 mark, is he the greatest Astro? Yes.
He already is.
Yes, he is. And then someone else said something as well. Somebody said maybe younger generations don't care about numbers as much anymore, but us old guys still do. Does that
name them?
Does that make me
an name them? That's the thing. You just lose, as you mentioned. You kind of lose what they are. You know, the big numbers.
I feel like younger kids do care about the numbers.
Depends
on the
numbers.
Not the same ones.
Yeah, it depends
on
the numbers.
And not in the same space.
I feel like they're more numbers heavy than it was back in the day.
But more stats in real time than a career stats.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it makes sense as to the difference that we, or different way we consume it, right? And I guess I'm kind of speaking out of my keister because it's not like I was there, but it feels like, you know, kids that collected baseball cards and everything looking at careers
back
through
the baseball
that lens
card.
Compared to, like, those folks who grew up watching and seeing this on the internet and seeing like more of this real time, plus more of the more and more advanced data we have on the individual brings us down to that level as opposed to kind of a larger career level at times sometimes. But still hopeful for that. How do we start talking about Ichiro? We were talking about Ichiro on the break.
I just love that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Some other things that are happening around and what's popping. Wild. The Astros, they get out of Sacramento. Period.
Two and two.
Yeah.
You look at the two middle wins.
Boy, those were fun.
And you're thinking, boy, they're killing the A's.
They hit the mess out of the baseball.
Then you
don't ask me about the sandwiching parts of games outside of that, though.
You would have thought that they swept them, you know? And then you look up and like, oh, wow, they split that series.
I mean, if you take all the runs and spread them out, they won, right? That's how that goes, is it not?
It still felt like a sweep.
It felt like it.
They won on aggregate. Isn't that how that goes?
But it felt like it.
Like, we got to do this as like electoral college. They had the most runs. They carried the state four wins.
Yeah.
Four wins for the Astros. Unfortunately, that's not how it works. A walk-off loss last night with Josh Hader being the one who gives it up. In extras, which was, surprising, But it also kind of isn't when you stretch Josh Hader out. You know, he gets the ninth and then have him come back out. You have any issue with that decision from Joe Spada?
I don't. It goes back to my long-held theory of you: if you have a chance to win a game, win that game. And we'll worry about the rest later. But now you got to worry about the rest later because they lost that game, and he's had 21 pitches.
In addition to what Abreu had 21.
21,
as well,
and 20. Okert had 20.
There you go.
Yeah, and Abreu had 21. So now you can worry. But in the moment, I did not.
You are now free to worry.
Free to worry.
Have at it. Yeah. Still a 5-game lead over the Seattle Mariners, though, in the AL West. I'll give you that update as it continues to be fun for me to mention that the Mariners are 5 games back. You're out in Anaheim or in Orange County facing off against the Angels tonight. It is a Hunter Brown night, so vaya con Dios. Enjoy your Friday with Hunter Brown on the mound. Last night in Indianapolis. Mm. A good thing, a fun thing that happened, we get the two best words in all of sports. What are those, Lopez?
Game 7.
It happens because the Pacers beat the living you-know-what out of Oklahoma City Thunder in a Game 6 that felt entirely different than the previous game in Game 5.
And felt entirely over at halftime.
It was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was over to the point of not, I'm telling you, like the backups, the benches cleared. At the start of the fourth quarter, and that felt like that could have been a little late.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is wild the swing that this particular series took because it felt like the Thunder were grabbing hold of this series. It felt like they figured out, okay, this is how we, you know, keep our turnovers down. This is how we turn over the Pacers and actually score off of those turnovers. This is how we limit Tyrese Halliburton.
Yeah.
It felt like they had figured some things out. The Pacers got back home, and it looked entirely different without the closer, Scott Foster, in the game. Like the fouls went the entirely different way. The turnovers were really the big thing because it feels like if you're letting the Pacers get out in transition in addition to turning over the ball a lot and not getting your possessions on offense for the Thunder, you're not going to win this. You're not going to win this game.
No, and it was easily their best and most complete game of the series, and it's heading into a Game 7. And Halliburton was effective. You know, he was very effective.
The injury was affecting him, though.
That's what I was about to say, but he wasn't necessarily, like, dominant.
But did you see basically what they did as a squad, as a staff, record label, and crew? Was it felt like Tyrese Halliburton still kind of did some of the Tyrese Halliburton things, and the things that Tyrese would do in driving and getting downhill were all exported to T.J. McConnell.
Yeah.
That was the T.J. McConnell game. I don't know that I've ever seen T.J. McConnell do quite that in that particular way, although T.J. McConnell, this is what he does. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels like every, and this is the beauty of the playoffs, every series, especially big ones like the finals, you get one from, like, one of these guys, a guy who you would normally not think about particularly much, except he becomes a vital part of why a team has their run and possibly is a champion. Like, he is setting himself up to never buy a drink in the state of Indiana, a basketball crazed place.
Sure.
Especially because he is a sentient, walking racial sports stereotype, ain't he? Like, that's what he is.
Yeah.
Like, he is gritty. He is the first one in, last one out. Mm-hmm. He is tough. Like, he is all of those stereotypes.
Is he a coach's kid?
I don't know if he is, but he played like it.
Yeah.
Actually, speaking of him being a kid, though, this is his pops who crashed NBA TV after he was on the set getting an interview after because it was his game. It was a podium game for him. So his pops seemed very, very excited about him winning the game and him playing in so well. But then within that, he is also very much a sports dad because he had one thing that was still on his mind about all of it. This is cut 12 with TJ McConnell's pops on the set.
What do you think of his performance tonight?
Excellent. Just disappointing, missed two foul shots in the beginning. I kept saying, man, I wish he'd have made those two foul shots, but he recovered and we won the game.
Were you that dad?
Not on national television.
So yes, that's a yes. Because you weren't on national television, so yes.
Not on national television. By the way, T.J. McConnell's dad, Tim McConnell, very successful and well-known basketball
coach.
There
it is, yeah!
One of the most successful coaches in the history of Western Pennsylvania Interscholastic League.
I seen someone say he put the pail in lunch pail.
So yes, coach's kid.
And This goes further into the coach's kid and also the I'm excited, however, you could do better. This was T.J. McConnell's pops on why he's hard on his son.
Pops, I got one question for you.
Yes, sir.
Why were you harder on him and softer on your daughter.
He says that.
It's
that's
true.
A lie.
it's true because it's true.
My daughter was an undefeated state championship. He lost in the state championship. We lost two games. So undefeated. He didn't play as well in the state championship. He played great, but we didn't win it.
It's unbelievable.
The truth hurts.
And now she's with the Mercury, so hey. I can't be more proud to say I have a son in the NBA and I have a daughter in the WNBA. This is a dream come true, and I'm going to OKC for my son to play in a championship game to win the world championship.
That's adorable.
Ain't it? It's also very unnecessary. Why was he going there? He missed. He lost two championships. And oh, by the way, he's also lying. McConnell's right. TJ's right on this. You just are softer on your daughter. Like what? I mean, I don't care. You might coach him up. You might really, you know, say similar things. But you're softer on your daughter.
Hey, let's talk to Cheryl Miller's daddy and see see how that one went as well, if that worked the same way. But shout out to TJ McConnell, who I guess I have set him up as new Reggie Miller in a way. No, I did not anticipate that. Game 7, Sunday night, for all the marbles. I'm so excited for this game.
Oh, man, all the marbles. Because we've been going back and forth. Okay, who's got momentum? Who do you think is going to win?
I didn't say none of that.
Yeah, we did. We got it on tape.
No, I ain't saying nothing about no momentum. I ain't saying nothing about no momentum.
We talked about who's going to win. Well, not momentum, but who do you think is going to win the series?
Oh, yeah, see, that's fine.
We've gone back and forth on that.
I'm now officially wrong because pre-series I called Thunder in 6.
Yeah.
It will not be that. I'm still leaning Thunder for the win.
I think so, but I can't say.
I can't say either. Yeah. Hey, I don't feel great about it.
Hey, the Pacers doing this for Jim Irsay, man.
Yeah, you've been consistent with
that. You have
been
consistent
with
that. Yeah. Hey, man, who are the Padres doing this for? Because the Padres-Dodgers, this rivalry is for real. Mm. There have been 6 hit batters in the last how many games? Between the two of them?
And not just batters. Tatis, Otani. I mean,
Tatis has gotten hit 3 times in the last couple of games.
He's been hit twice. He's been hit twice. It's off the rails. It's off the rails. Managers were like legit going to fight in the hallway. Like, I'll see you after the game. Like Dave Roberts and Stilt, they were just like, oh no. We can yell all we want on the field. We're going into the hallway.
Did you actually see any of the hit, especially like the Tatis?
Yes.
Hit by pitches?
Yes.
All right, so Dave Roberts says, and the first two were the same guy.
Mm-hmm.
He says that none of them were intentional.
Okay.
Okay, I saw the eye roll. So you're not believing that. I do believe that the first two were unintentional.
No. No. The biggest cop-out in baseball these days, and I've had pitchers tell me this, is when you say, well, it was an off-speed pitch. I couldn't have hit him with an off-speed pitch. I would have hit him with a – they do that. They literally do that because they have such control of their off-speed pitches. They want to be able to have the plausible deniability. You know what I mean? Oh, no, it was a changeup. It was a 92-mile-an-hour changeup.
So do any of these qualify for you like a situation where it would put a second runner on base with no outs early in the game in the
but
second
wasn't inning? It first base open?
First base was open.
That's the thing.
Okay.
See, that's the thing.
I think that was the very first one. Yeah. The second one, it was literally the first at-bat of the bottom of the first.
Yeah.
Where he hits him.
Mm-hmm.
You think would that factor in at all for you?
Hit him early in the game or hit him late in the game?
Do you feel like the last one, I think it was the last one where Tatis got hit.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because I was looking at the pitcher's reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like he was like, oh, bleep, I did not mean to do this.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Especially because it was that cat's debut. It's his MLB debut. He's trying to stay in the league. He's not hitting dudes.
Yeah. Because I know sometimes people trying to, you know, put on this little acting thing like they didn't mean to do it, but they really meant to do it. It seemed like he did not mean to do this and cause this.
And here's this is the old been covering this game forever in me coming out. When a veteran says, hey, rookie, hit him. They don't want to hit him because of what you just talked about.
Yeah.
They are like, oh, gosh.
Yeah.
But you know what they have to do? They have to hit.
That's what I was asking. That's what I was trying to get at. Because looking at his reaction.
I think he was regretful.
Yeah, it looked like he either wasn't trying to or didn't want to.
Yeah, but Kershaw goes up to him and says, hit him. What are you going to do?
I guess hit him. Good for baseball, bad for baseball.
I'd be like, man, don't tell me what to do. I'm fighting for my life.
Oh, you say that behind the microphone.
Don't tell me what to do. I'm fighting for my MLB life.
Don't tell me what to do. And I don't know if Clayton told him or not, but I'm just using it as an example. Like, like I've loved having these conversations about all this. It's always plausible deniability. It's always the veteran doing it. It's always intentional 90% of the time. It's, and I could be dead wrong. I know it, but just history tells me, yeah.
Good for baseball, bad for baseball, this particular. Because, I mean, rivalries inherently in sports help you tell narratives that get people's attention. Except that is a ball going many miles per hour hitting a whole bunch of dudes, including Shohei Ohtani and Fernando Tatis, two guys that you could very easily say are faces of baseball.
That last thing you said is what would tell me, in this case, bad for baseball. Two of the best players, if not the two best players, you know, in the game right now. You know, I mean, I'm a big fan of Tatis.
I wasn't going to say anything. I was just thinking about it. Sorry. Sometimes my expressions show up on my face.
I think Tatis is just off the charts good in every way. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. That's not the conversation. What I am saying is two of the best players in baseball, six got hit by pitch. And, oh, by the way, speaking of Manny Machado, he said they better hope that X-ray comes back negative.
Yeah. He told him to light some candles behind it too.
Yeah.
Speaking of Tatis and making sure that he's not he's not hurt significantly.
I tell you what, I'm not investing in any of these teams, but I will be watching the next time they play.
Yep.
There you go.
Yep.
All right. That's what's popping here in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, ESPN put out their all quarter century team. And Lopez got into his bag and he was like, you know what? How about I put together a Texans all quarter century team? How does Lopez's all quarter century team look for the Texans? Who makes it? Let's talk about all that next.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.